Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. A heat wave has been gripping much of the central and eastern parts of the country, including the Carolinas. It happens every summer, but this is the first heat wave of the summer of 25, and it's delivering dangerously hot and humid conditions with temperatures near 100 or at 100 from Texas to Florida and up to Maine, with heat indices even higher. Extreme heat is a killer. It is responsible for an estimated 1,300 deaths each year, and believe it or not, Mecklenburg County is among the counties in North Carolina with the most heat-related deaths, and yet we have only limited resources to help people stay cool and safe. So today, we look at the science behind heat waves and the forces at work to create the current heat dome, and we look at what to expect as summer proceeds and how excessive heat impacts your health and ways to stay cool. We're going to spend individual time with each of our guests this hour because they each bring different areas of expertise. Brittany Van Voorhees is a meteorologist for WCNC-TV. Zach Turner is WFAE's climate reporter and author of the WFAE Climate Newsletter. And Dr. Chris Branner, MD, is specialty medical director of urgent care services at Atrium Health Levine's Children's Urgent Care Blakeney, and he's in charge of all of the urgent care centers under the Atrium umbrella. Thank you all for being here. Welcome.
Thanks.
Thanks for having us.
So, Brittany, I'm going to start with you because you're the weather person. This is the first, as I said, the first heat wave of the summer of 25. It will not be the last, most likely. It appears that other parts of the state, however, of North Carolina, are getting the brunt of this more so than Charlotte, the eastern part of the state, Raleigh, etc. But it's still hot. Is there anything notable about this heat wave, or is this just your typical summer moment of intense heat?
It is definitely not your typical summer moment of intense heat. I think that's one of the biggest things that I want people to understand as meteorologists. At the end of the day, it's a public safety thing. We're trying to help keep people safe. So we are normally around this time in Charlotte seeing a high temperature around 89 or 90. The past 3 days, we've seen the mid-90s, if not yesterday, 100. That's the air temperature. So Monday's heat index was 101. Tuesday's was 105, yesterday's was 110, and then today we're expecting to be right around 103, 105 again, which again is much higher than normal for this time of year. So it's not a disastrous scare people, you know, trying to push this kind of agenda or anything like that. It is to help keep people safe. Once you get to a heat index of about 103 or higher, you start to see more heat-related illnesses, heat exhaustion, heat cramps. And I know Dr. Brandon's going to talk more about that. But once we hit that threshold, that's the time where you'll start to see your local meteorologist, your local scientist talking about longer, more widespread heat. And so this is not your normal summer-like pattern. By the end of this week, by the weekend, we'll be back in that normal summer-like pattern. So it's hot and humid all year round, but when we target these heat waves, these heat domes, and we're really talking about it in a more serious manner, that's when you know it is above average.
In the wintertime, you meteorologists talk about wind chill, and in the summertime, you talk about heat index, and it's kind of the inverse of each other. But tell me, I understand what the heat index is, but there are a lot of people who may not. What exactly is it, and how do you calculate it?
So the heat index is calculated by this crazy calculus scientific, you know, formula, which you can find on the National Weather Service's website. I also did a weather IQ on this last week. But there's also a National Weather Service heat index chart that people can use where it has the dew point and it has the air temperature if you specifically are really interested in the numbers. But essentially, it is a meteorologist looking at the temperature and the dew point. So the temperature outside is the air temperature. The dew point is the measure of moisture in the atmosphere. The closer those numbers are together, the higher the relative humidity. And what heat index essentially is again, in its more basic understanding, is that when we go outside and it's hot and humid, we sweat. We also sweat when it's hot, not humid. So when there's so much moisture in the atmosphere and our body's natural reaction is to sweat to be able to cool ourselves off and release that, when there's so much moisture already present, our bodies aren't able to sweat as efficiently, and that's why it feels hotter. Just like when you talk about the wind chill, which we also call the feels like temperature in winter, it is our body going outside, and as wind moves across our skin, it releases heat and makes us feel colder. So the air temperature is the actual air temperature. The heat index and the wind chill is what it feels like to a human based on the other weather conditions that day.
And the reason our sweat doesn't help us cool off when it's incredibly humid and incredibly hot is because there's no place for the sweat to evaporate, because the air is moisture laden. As you said, we reached the pinnacle of this yesterday, of this current heat wave, and we've broken the back on it. It's going to start cooling off after today. And today will in fact be cooler than tomorrow. But as I said, this is not the first heat wave. Not the only heat wave that will come our way this summer. So we want to do this now because this is a dangerous time for a lot of people. Why did we have this current? What weather conditions went into this current heat situation, and why is it going away?
So the specific instance in this case was that we had what's called a heat dome. So a heat dome is essentially an area of really strong high pressure, and it's very typical to see this around the southeast this time of year. Obviously, it doesn't happen the same exact time, but we have what's called the Bermuda High, which always is essentially present in the Atlantic Basin. And so when that shifts closer to the East Coast, we get what's called a heat dome, and that's high pressure overhead. Because high pressure is a sinking motion of air, it suppresses storms. So we get less storms. You notice Monday, Tuesday, and at least the first half of yesterday, we didn't see any storm action, but that started to break last night. So with the heat dome over us, when there's no storms, think we don't get rain-cooled air. And then secondly, we don't have clouds. And so that sunshine is essentially just beating down even stronger than normal on the ground and is allowing for that heat dome to heat us up even more than normal. Now, that heat dome typically results in what's called a heat wave, which a heat wave is essentially 2 days or more of abnormally high temperatures. There are specific National Weather Service offices across the country that have specific criteria to what they'll call a heat wave, for example, 5 degrees above a normal three. But in its simplest form, it's 2 days or more. In this case, I would say our heat wave lasted 4 days. So they're different in the sense of a heat dome causes a heat wave, but a heat wave could be 7 to 10 days. It could be 2 days, it could be 4 days, and then based on how hot it is. Also, based on where you live, right? 95 degrees in Charlotte's going to feel different than 95 in Maine in June. It's also going to feel different than 95 in Death Valley, where it's almost always this hot. So it's just basically dependent on exactly where you are.
A National Weather Service meteorologist, I think his name was Alex Lehmers, described heat domes as acting like a lid on a pot. Is that a good analogy? Is it a situation where the air is hot and it can't get out, and so it just gets hotter and hotter and hotter in a kind of feedback loop?
Definitely, because at night too, we're not allowing for that heat to be released as efficiently, especially in an urban area like Charlotte. Because of the urban heat island effect, we have cement and all the urbanization, especially near as you get closer to uptown, that retains that heat. And so at night, it's trying to release it. So actually, sometimes at night, we're even hotter sometimes during a heat wave, especially closer to a city center, because that heat is continuously releasing at night, even when the sun is down. So that feedback loop just kind of feeds upon itself back and forth. For example, yesterday, until we had rain-cooled air, the low temperature that morning was 79. That would have been by far a record in Charlotte, but just shows how hot it was even at 6, 7 o'clock in the morning.
Zach, we always say that the weather is not the climate and vice versa, but scientists are warning that we're likely to see even more dangerous temperatures for longer periods of time in the future. And they link this trend, obviously, to human-caused climate change. Both 2023 and 2024 were designated as the hottest years on record. Are we as humans rather like the frog in the boiling pot of water? We kind of know it's hot, but we don't know how hot or what's coming our way until we realize, oh my goodness, it's too hot to continue living. Is that where we are?
That's a bit of a terrifying analogy there,
Thank you. It's
which I
morning.
appreciate as a climate reporter. So the way I would think about it is we have this effect of global warming, and when we're thinking about like the 3 degrees of warming that's happening kind of across the globe, it's not heating up evenly. So, for example, North Carolina is cooling or heating a lot slower than other parts of the world, like parts of Europe and in the Arctic, where they're seeing that heating happening a lot more rapidly. So in North Carolina, when you're looking at these trends and how our climate is changing, we're starting to see higher overnight temperatures, we're starting to see more severe storms, and of course on our coast, we're starting to see sea level rise, which is causing a myriad kind of other climate-related impacts.
Dr. Branner, experts tell us that oppressive heat poses particular risks to those with existing health issues and to children, and you are a pediatric expert, as somebody specially trained in that. What makes children so vulnerable?
Well, I think that the children's vulnerability comes from situational awareness, or either lack thereof, or their inability to control it. In general, children are healthier than older adults, and children bounce back. I always say that as a pediatrician, kids make me look good despite what I say or do, because they get better. But a child that's in a car that's locked, if the car is getting hot, they're unable to unfasten their car seatbelt. They're unable to roll down the window, open the door, and get out. Things that an adult would be able to do. I'm in a car and it's hot, and that's how I'm adjusting to it. So as a child, I don't have that situational, in that instance, control to be able to take care of myself in that situation. The same way children don't have situational awareness, they'll run out into the middle of the street. They won't be thinking about, okay, I want to go outside and play because it's fun, but they're not thinking, okay, do I need to stop and come inside and get a drink of water, then refresh? Kids just go. So that plays a lot into a child's vulnerability. So their inability to control their own situation and their lack of situational awareness, just in general, to get themselves in and out of danger sometimes.
We're talking about heat and its effect on the body as we go through this program, and what you can do to cool down when it is this hot on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Is it that kids are just outside playing more than adults, and they don't understand that you have to hydrate? So if that's the case, or even get into the shade, or even come in for a moment or two to cool down before you go out again, is that a parental responsibility?
It is definitely the responsibility of a parent or caregiver or camp counselor or coach to help the children be in the best situation possible. I would see this a lot when I was back in my training many years ago, and I would be on the sidelines, say, of football practice during the summer. I did my residency in Little Rock, Arkansas. So once practice gets started in early August, the kids are out there, they're working hard, they don't want to quit, they're trying to build mental fortitude, and it's 95 degrees, it's humid, they're wearing pads. Reminding them, the coach has to have the responsibility to say, okay, we're going to have hard work, but we're going to build in breaks. We're going to build in time in the shade. We're going to factor these things in. You know, years ago, that used to be seen as a sign of weakness or a sign of a lack of toughness. And so I think because of the awareness of the impacts of heat from information shared from our meteorologists teaching us about the weather, us understanding about the climate, we now have shifted to an area where that's hopefully safer, and people are mindful of the situation and how to help, in particular, children to be protected, where they can run out, play, and have fun, but they may not be thinking about all the dangers, and we can help support them in those ways.
And it isn't just children who, obviously, we're all affected by this, but particularly right. There are other at-risk groups other than children, and when we come back, I want to talk about them, because you would think an adult would know, gee, I'm really too hot, I need to do something about that. But sometimes they don't know that they're going through heat exhaustion or heat stroke. And we'll talk about the difference of those two things as well when we come back. Dr. Chris Branner is with us, who is a specialty medical director with urgent care services at Atrium Health's Levine Children Urgent Care. Brittany Voorhees is with us, meteorologist at WCNC-TV. And Zach Turner, our climate reporter for WFAE. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the weather today, particularly the heat wave that we've been experiencing because it's the first one of the summer, and it has been dangerous for a lot of people. And we're talking about this with Brittany Van Voorhees, who is a meteorologist for WCNC-TV, our climate reporter at WFAE News, Zach Turner, and Dr. Chris Branner, who's the Specialty Medical Director for Urgent Care Services at Atrium Health. We were talking about children, Dr. Branner, and how they are susceptible and why they are susceptible to these extremely hot conditions. But it's not just those young people who are at risk. There are other groups. Who would they be?
Well, in particular, during heat waves, we start to worry about the impacts on the elderly or those with chronic conditions. And those groups are more vulnerable because they have organ systems that may not be functioning normally. Think someone who has underlying heart disease or who has underlying lung disease or kidney disease, which helps regulate fluids throughout the body. Once the heat starts to increase, then the body normally has to adjust to compensate for all those different areas. And so if the system is already broken a little bit, not quite able to respond in a normal situation, we're getting these abnormal extreme situations like these heat waves that we're in now, then what you can have is a body that's not able to regulate itself as well. And so that increases the vulnerability. Additionally, sometimes medications that people are on, common things like antihistamines, can actually increase the risk factors in association with heat-related illnesses. And so those are the things that we start to think about with adults in particular in regards to their health that can affect their risk factor when the heat starts to really, really go up.
Most people in the South, not all, and we'll talk about that, have air conditioning or have access to air conditioning. Mm-hmm. But other parts of the country, air conditioning is not really necessary most often. So right. When a heat wave hits, they're in real trouble. And in 2021, there was a heat dome in the Pacific Northwest where they really don't have air conditioning because they don't need it normally. Nearly 1,000 people died, many of them adults over 65, actually most of them adults over 65. And according to Harvard Medical School, more than 80% of the estimated 12,000 people in the United States who die of heat-related causes are over 60. And they say that studies show it can be hard for even healthy older adults to tell when it is too hot or if they are dehydrated. If you agree with that, why? If I'm thirsty, I'm thirsty.
I do agree with that. And it's the patterns that we see, unfortunately. Again, I talked earlier in the program about situational awareness in regards to pediatric patients. But older individuals, older adults, can have the same kind of lack of awareness. There's, if we talk about being acclimatized to a situation, one of the things I think in the South, we're acclimatized to living in heat. It's going to get hot in the summer. We're having this conversation because it's abnormally hot, unusually hot, and it requires, different focus. They're not acclimatized in the Pacific Northwest or in New England to these types of heat waves and impacts. And so the people are simply, people may not be aware kind of the danger that they're in. And so you may be sitting around saying, it's really hot. It's hotter than normal. But something starts to change as it gets even hotter. Your brain may not be functioning normally, really. It starts to slow down. You start to think differently. And you may not be aware of your situation that you need to get yourself out of that environment into a cooler environment, try to find fans, try to find shade. Additionally, sometimes with adult situations, that's where, you can talk about your homeless population, people with different resources. It's a blessing to be able to sit here and have this conversation indoors in an air-conditioned environment, but I may or may not have access to that. And I think that I'm okay. I think I'm safe. I'm inside, but I'm in an area that's trapped, it's heating up, and I'm just simply not recognizing that my situation that I thought was okay is actually putting me more and more at risk.
I want to talk more about this concept of acclimation to heat or cold for that matter. But we'll talk about that later. I want to get back to heat domes for a second, Brittany, because data shows that heat waves are occurring more than they used to. Is this the wave of the future? Not the heat wave, just is this the trend? Is this going to be our future?
It is, unless there are small changes that are made. The way that I always tell, you know, friends, family members that are asking about, you know, climate change and things like that, is that we can't change the ebbs and flows that happen in the earth, because they do happen. Heat waves and cold waves have always happened. It's just that human related activities linked to fossil fuels and things like that are making these worse. I interviewed a NOAA expert back in 2023, and the way he described this was just so great to me, because it was just so simple, is that they've always studied heat, hot and cold waves. We can get cold waves just the same way as we get heat waves. And we can technically have heat waves any time of the year. It's more prevalent, of course, in the summer when people are talking about extreme heat and potential fatalities. But back in the 50s and 60s, for every heat wave, there was one cold wave. So we had a 1-to-1 ratio. Now, in the 2020s, for every cold wave, there's at least 2 heat waves, and that trend is going up. So when you look at long range data like that, and you say, okay, now we have 2 heat waves for every cold wave, and those numbers are going up, what will that mean in 20 years, 40 years? You also look at long range climate data. If people are familiar with the difference between weather and climate, I know Zach will talk a little bit more about this, but I always say that climate is your personality and weather is your attitude or your mood that day. So weather is what's happening now, climate is a long-term comparison. So climate data is recalculated every 30 years. And in Charlotte specifically, from 1960 to 1990, our average high temperature, highest, was 89. Wow. If in 1990 to 2020, it went up to 91. Now, to a normal person who, you know, doesn't study meteorology or climate data or statistics, they're like, 2 degrees, who cares? But now you've increased your base by at least 2 degrees Fahrenheit. So every time we talk about now a heat wave or above average warmth, you're now going up and having to add 2 degrees to that. On top of that, specifically in the United States, we in the South are impacted by heat waves more just because of the heat and the humidity combination. So that brings in the heat index factor. But any place that has an urban heat island, so a Charlotte, an Atlanta, an Orlando, a Nashville, is also bumping that number up too, because we have that extra urban heat island effect. It's not bad that we live near a city. It just means that we are typically more susceptible to those impacts.
I know that Zach wants to get on this, but before he does, I mentioned that heat waves are occurring 3 times more often than they did in the 1960s. They are actually lasting longer than they used to in the 1960s. So I was going to ask you, with the heat wave we've just experienced in this part of June, with the temperatures being what they were, would that have been considered unusual a few years ago? And I'm getting the answer already. Yes. Is that right?
It would have been considered unusual now. It's considered unusual 10 years ago, especially, but maybe in the 60s, it would have been like 4 times as unusual. But yes, very unusual, especially to hit 100 in Charlotte. We are hot, yes, of course, but it actually has gotten harder to hit 100. I know this might seem a little bit nuanced, but think, when the air is drier, it takes less energy to warm temperature. So you actually were more likely to get 130 years ago in Charlotte. Now, because it's so humid, it takes so much more energy to get there. So you might have had a temperature of 100 degrees, but a heat index of 103, you know, 30 years ago. Well, now it's harder to get to that 100 for us, but 100 and 103 is much different than 100 like we had yesterday, in a heat index of 110. So we're actually more likely to stay in the 90s, but we're more likely to see heat index values in the dangerous category of the warmth and the moisture.
So, Zach, I have a question for you, but I know you wanted to comment on something that Brittany was talking about. Maybe the reason that has passed, but go ahead.
No, I just wanted to offer this. One of the best metaphors that I've ever heard for this relationship between climate and the way it kind of manifests through our weather came from UNC Charlotte professor Jack Sheff, where he explained it kind of like a six-sided die. And you can think of the faces of the die as these different weather phenomenon, with one being very mild weather to a six being incredibly severe extreme weather. And as our climate continues to warm globally, the faces change. Instead of having a 1 be the low end, it becomes a 2, and you start to see like a 7 added onto that dice. It's not that you can't have mild days of weather. It just becomes less common, and then the more extreme weather becomes even more likely.
So average temperatures, I read yesterday, have risen across the contiguous 48 states since 1901, which actually surprised me. They've been going up since the beginning of the 20th century, with an increased rate of warming since the late 1970s. Now, Zach, if fossil fuels are in large part responsible for this, why did it begin in 1901 and why did it accelerate in the 1970s?
I think this is just following sort of trends in industrialization as we're seeing the development of our sort of developed nations like the United States. I guess now more recently like China, you're putting more and more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. And that sort of has this cumulative effect of trapping light and radiation from the sun in our atmosphere. So as we're seeing these greenhouse gases build up, notably carbon dioxide, you're going to see that effect increase cumulatively.
So this is not just a U.S. phenomenon. This is a worldwide phenomenon, with 9 of the top 10 warmest years on record occurring since 1998, which wasn't all that long ago. But the places that are experiencing it the most, this actually surprised me, Brittany, are in this country, are the North, the West, and Alaska. Why not the South? It's already hot here. Why wouldn't we be warming up more than they are?
I think it's the fact that it's already hot and humid here. So we're seeing those trends are just not as drastic, because basically, essentially, all the places that you mentioned are not as hot and not as humid as us naturally. So those increases are showing up, you know, statistic wise is higher because they already had a lower base. Because again, 91 for an average high temperature in Charlotte in the summer, it is the number I give to people, and they're like, they brush it off. But I mean, when you're talking 91 places like New England, significant difference. 91 in a place like Alaska, significant difference. And it kind of ties back into the issues that we've seen the past few years, because it's not just a warm, you know, base level, but it's the prolonged nature of it. And I know that Chris talked a little bit about this when it comes to, you know, and I think you did as well, places that don't have air conditioning. Those places didn't need air conditioning because they didn't see heat to this level or this prolonged. There's plenty of classrooms and schools, especially I know in the New England states, because we had a story about this. I remember getting out of summer of 2024 that like had to send kids home or couldn't let them come to school because they don't have air conditioning in their school. So it's not just a level of, okay, a few degrees warmer here and there. It's the prolonged nature of the heat now creeping into the end of summer, beginning of school, or more drastic swings that other parts of the country that aren't used to with the heat and humidity aren't equipped to handle. So while our numbers are going up, they just maybe aren't going up as, you know, rapidly as somewhere else that was already cold, because we know it's never been cold in June in Charlotte.
Zach.
A lot of this too, if you're looking at places like Alaska and further up north where you have these glaciers and these ice sheets, we've talked a little bit about the urban heat island effect, and that is due in large part to the masses of concrete, asphalt and metal, these materials that have incredibly low albedo, or the amount of light that they're reflecting is really low. It's absorbing heat. But ice has really high albedo. It's reflecting that light, that radiation, back out into the atmosphere. It's keeping us cool. So as we're seeing these ice sheets recede, as we're seeing less of that type of land cover, those areas are starting to heat up faster.
So, doctor, let's talk about signs, warning signs that the body gives you that tells you you're in trouble because of the heat. What are those signs?
Well, you're going to start to, the basics of warming up may start to be with your skin feeling flushed. You start to sweat. Sweat is there to help us evaporate and dissipate temperature to help cool ourselves down. Those are all the things that we see and hear. And normally expect. But when you're starting to get into trouble, potentially, or when you start to have discomfort, you start maybe perhaps having cramps of your muscles, arms, legs, abdominal muscle cramps, where, you know, it's a little unusual. Those are the things that you can start to see as a person is progressing into heat exhaustion. In addition, just to, you know, feeling more tired, energy levels going down, those are the things that you see that are, should start to be warning signs that say, hey, I need to find some place to cool down. I need to find some shade. I need to find some air conditioning. I need to start, hydrating more, watching my electrolytes. Beyond that, skipping from heat exhaustion into the most extreme, which is heat stroke, and that's where, when you talk about the deaths, that's where people have entered into that category. You get body temperatures raising up over 103 degrees. You start to have mental, you're basically have the brain becomes in a sense, inflamed, called encephalopathy. But that your brain is not functioning, you're not thinking right, you're not able to control, your motor functions as well. And that is the very dangerous situation that you go from heat exhaustion into heat stroke. So recognizing when you're in that exhaustion stage is important to try to bring yourself, I want to say, back from the brink. A few years ago, there was a very unfortunate situation where there was an NFL player who I believe he played for Minnesota Vikings. So as we talked about, they were in summer camp, in training camp, rather, up in Minnesota, where it shouldn't be this hot, but it was. And then now you factor in the pads and the extreme activity and exertion that an NFL player is going through, and he was a lineman. And he flipped into heat stroke and had an unfortunate outcome. And so those are the things that we watch out for as we're starting to warm up. If you're getting cramps, your energy's starting to go down, recognize the signs and hopefully take some precautions.
We're talking about heat and its impact on the body as we experience the first heat wave of the summer of 25 on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Brittany.
All I wanted to say was that I also, based on some of the stories that I've done, and I know Dr. Brenner, you probably have this as well, is a lot of it comes down to overnight lows as well. People don't care about the low temperature sometimes, it feels like, because it's not flashy, it's not sexy, like 100 degrees at the airport. It's the same reason why people don't care as much as heat, it seems like, versus like a tornado. Heat is the number one weather-related killer in the United States because you can't see it, and that's one of the big things based on a lot of the experts that I talked to. But overnight lows are actually warming at about 2 to 3 times the rapid pace compared to even daytime highs. And so that at overnight sensation, when your body is trying to cool off at night, normally you need a temperature of about 75 degrees or lower. So if you're not getting that reset that Dr. Brenner was talking about earlier, now you're already starting off kind of the day in fight or flight mode. And so especially in those areas that are not used to getting temperatures those hot, we're like going to sleep and waking up, not even reset and ready for the day. So once you get that prolonged overnight low sensation as well, it can make it even worse. So I just wanted to throw that out there because I think a lot of times that we forget that it's not just the high temperature that day, it's also the low temperatures. And we actually see way more records for warmest low temperature in Charlotte than we see for record hottest high temperature.
I have about 20 seconds left, doctor. I'm just curious about if you're somebody that's going into heat stroke because your brain is not functioning because of the heat, will you recognize it, or does that require another person to say there's something wrong with that person? Let me help them.
Someone else is going to have to see that, recognize that, and help get you to emergency care as quickly as possible, because at that point, you're likely not thinking rationally at all.
And if you're going into heat stroke, emergency, you can't take care of yourself in a non-clinical
Emergency.
setting.
That's not, I'm an urgent care physician. That's not urgent care. That's emergent care.
We'll talk more about that in a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about the weather, the heat dome we've been experiencing, and its effect on the body, and how risky and dangerous it is for a lot of people, particularly at-risk groups, but those without air conditioning or respite from the heat, with Brittany Van Voorhees, who's a meteorologist for WCNC-TV, Zach Turner is WFAE's climate reporter, and Dr. Chris Branner is the specialty medical director with urgent care services at Atrium Health Levine's Children's Hospital's urgent care centers. And we were just talking about when you're going into severe heat stroke, where your brain is not functioning well and your body is shutting down, your organs are shutting down, you may not be in a position to notice that in yourself because you're
Right.
rattled. Other people have to notice it. And you stress, Dr. Branner, that urgent care at that stage is required. Have you noticed an uptick in the number of people coming into urgent cares over the last several years because of the increased amount of heat?
So I would actually slightly correct that statement and say that urgent care is actually not the place for that type of emergency. That's actually emergent care. And I differentiate that a lot for patients and friends and colleagues in explaining that if you're in heat stroke, you really need massive amount of emergency services that you can't get in your primary care office or in an urgent care setting where there's more limited resources. That really is an all hands on deck situation to try to get that person's body cooled down in 30 minutes or less from when it really started to heat up. Again, body temperatures can be over 103. I can't really say if we're seeing more patients coming in with that. That honestly would be a question for my emergency department colleagues. But recognizing the extreme nature of that situation where you need to get that patient to the emergency department as quick as possible because they need to rapidly cool the body. You can't even give somebody something to drink. Hey, I just want to get you cooled down here, have something to drink. If their brain is not functional, they can't swallow correctly. Their risk of aspirating or breathing in liquid into their lungs goes up. So you actually could potentially make them sicker by trying to help them. That all needs to be in a controlled environment, which is what the emergency department would provide. And that's where, where heat stroke as a we talk about who recognizes it. If I'm an adult and I'm going into heat stroke and I'm by myself, I don't necessarily know what's happening, and someone isn't there to move me to another place. With children, we're hopefully keeping an eye on them. We're controlling their environment. We're able to help protect them and recognize. But that's why your elderly, your risk factors and your death count, your death rate is higher in elderly adults who, maybe by themselves, may not have the resources and are not there. Someone's not there to recognize when there's truly a problem and get them to emergency services.
So this can happen anywhere. This can happen in rural areas. It can happen in suburban areas. But the urban areas, cities, are particularly prone to this because of the heat island effect from the concrete and the asphalt and the lack of shade and the constant feedback of heat radiating off of pavements. And if you're living in an area close to downtowns that does not have air conditioning in your house, you could be at severe risk when the temperatures reach as high as we've gotten to in the last couple of days. Mecklenburg County, Zach, among the 100 counties in North Carolina, evidently has the highest rate of heat-related deaths. What's up with that?
Yeah, I was looking at some of the data for heat-related deaths and also emergency department visits for Mecklenburg County, for the rest of the state. In Mecklenburg County, over the last 5 years, we've had six deaths. And then looking at, but we have far, far more emergency department visits. So last year, like you were talking about, it was exceptionally hot. Same with the year before that. In 2024, Mecklenburg County saw 342 emergency department visits. And in talking with a nurse manager at in Novant Health's emergency department, it sounds like a lot of those folks are coming from home. And that's going to be different than if you look at a place, say, like Gaston County. It's a little bit more rural. Folks are going to be coming in from work more likely, perhaps, than coming from home. There in 2024, we saw 117 folks visit the emergency department for heat-related illness in Gaston County. So you can kind of see the difference there between we are seeing a lot more emergency department visits in Mecklenburg County and some of these more urban counties. And also where they're coming from is going to be different than when you're in rural counties.
And we know about this problem, and we know where the problem exists, because last year, 60 volunteers fanned out across the city to map the Charlotte hotspots, where the hotter places were. And they were Freedom Drive, Wilkinson Boulevard, and North Tryon, which have wide roads and lots of big box stores and asphalt parking lots, but they have adjacent neighborhoods. And many of those neighborhoods are lower income and either don't have air conditioning or they can't afford to run the air conditioning that they have. What did the county do with that information? Because I'm told that we have limited resources to help those people.
Yeah, so the strategy, I guess, in terms of what the county and the city are doing for helping residents cope with extreme heat, I guess talking about limited resources, there's a couple of things they're doing to provide immediate relief. They're opening up these cooling centers, like recreational centers. They've got pools, spray grounds, and using when there's a heat advisory, when there's a heat wave, like what we've been experiencing since Tuesday, they'll open up CATS, the public transit system, kind of allow people to go to those places for free, not having to pay that fare. However, that does involve a lot of them sitting at unsheltered bus stops and being increasingly exposed to heat. Another initiative that they started was handing out box fans to seniors with disabilities. So they're targeting a very specific, somewhat limited group of folks, and maybe not necessarily everyone that might benefit from those services.
Let me ask about box fans.
Sure.
Fans are not air conditioning, doctor. They blow air on you. The air is as hot as the temperature is. Do they actually do anything?
Yes, because again, when you're warming up, but not into the dangerous conditions, you're sweating. And so the fan helps to circulate air across your skin to help with the evaporation of that sweat that does have a cooling effect.
Okay, so they actually do help. I'm sorry to interrupt, yes. Zach, but yeah, that was on my mind yesterday when I was reading about this. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there is a limit to, I guess, their effectiveness, and that's going to vary depending on humidity. So as it gets increasingly humid, the way that your sweat is cooling you off is by evaporating. And if there's a lot of moisture already in the air, that's going to slow the rate. In talking to health experts, it sounds like having some amount of air blowing over your skin is going to be better than nothing to help facilitate that. But the efficiency, the effectiveness of that is going to go down as humidity increases.
I want to talk about air conditioning, but doctor, I grew up, I'm old, so I grew up in a time when our house, and I grew up in Virginia, our house was not air conditioned. My parents' bedroom was, but the rest of the house was not. And we lived, we survived, and we went through heat waves, and it was hot. And I remember sleeping on sweat, sticky sheets, because there was no, we didn't have ceiling fans, that we had a little teeny fan that rotated, but it was hard to go to sleep. But we lived through it. Do we acclimate, or have we gotten used to air conditioning? And so now when these heat waves hit, and we're not at work, we have to go home, where perhaps we can't afford to run the air conditioning, or we don't have it, it's all that much more worse.
Great question. You know, you're kind of a product of your environment and your time. And so, you know, I grew up, you know, at a time where we didn't have air conditioning in all the cars, and we didn't necessarily have it in all the buildings as well. And so from an acclimating standpoint or an adapting standpoint, you had to learn how to survive. A funny anecdote, my great-grandmother was driving down I-40 decades ago, and noticed everybody had their windows up in the car. She said, well, they have their windows up, why can't we? So rolled the windows up, and everybody in the car started burning up. Didn't realize that they had newer, fancier cars that had that new air conditioning. Oh, so we had to roll down the windows. When I was a freshman at Duke University during undergrad, my dorm, which no longer exists, has been razed to the ground, and they built a new facility, we didn't have air conditioning. Well, we had to make friends with the guys in the dorm room across the hall, because you could open up their windows and doors and our box fan, and we could get a flow of air moving through. So you had to learn how to adapt and change. And that's kind of, I think, you know, what we talk about in these environments is what's your strategy? What's your plan to adjust to the new norm, that is these heat waves that we're seeing, and how do you adapt to your environment and make yourself safe?
So Zach, this state does not require air conditioning in rental properties. They do require heating, but they don't require cooling. And City Council's Dimple Ejimera has said, quote, there's nothing we can adopt in terms of that kind of ordinance at the local level, because North Carolina is a Dillon rule state and the legislature rules supreme. But State Representative Tracy Clark was pushing a bill recently that appears now to be dead in the session, at least, that would require AC in these units. She says AC ought to be a necessity, not an amenity. It is a human right. How many others agree with her?
I think there are multiple groups, including the Charlotte-Mecklenburg Climate Leaders, that have gone in front of City Council to petition City Council to put in, if not a mandate, set aside money. I think they asked for $2 million to start this voluntary program to get AC units into rental units that don't currently have them. But in terms of this argument that Dimple Ejimera and other City Council members have perhaps brought forward, Whether or not North Carolina is a Dillon's rule state is, I think, a topic of debate. And even if it is, there are, within that sort of legal philosophy, there are some implicit powers that the city has to protect residents, I guess, against dangerous conditions in their rental units through the 1997 Residential Rentals Agreement Act. So if they can protect residents against cold temperatures, there are some steps that they could take, such as an AC mandate, that could potentially alleviate that issue. But even when residents do have AC, we have found from talking to folks that are visiting these cooling centers or getting these box fans that another big consideration is whether or not they can afford to run AC. So for folks that can't afford that electricity bill, they may choose to operate a box fan or just
forego
that.
Well, let me ask you this. We have help for people who can't afford to heat their homes in the wintertime. Do we not have something similar for people who have air conditioning but can't afford the utility bill in the summertime?
Well, there's a number of different programs that are available in terms of like through Duke Energy. There's some, I think, energy assistance programs. We also have through the state, there are programs that you can apply to for energy efficiency upgrades that can help bring down your energy bill. There's also some programs that kind of help you do these energy retrofits to make your home work more efficiently so that when you are, you know, cooling your home, that cool air isn't just leaking out into the environment outside. So there are programs that people can take advantage of more and more. I think it's just education and helping connect those people to those resources.
It's education and the willingness to believe facts. we live in a warming world, and there are still people who deny that we have anything to do with it, that it's just a thing that's happening with the globe, and that's just that we have cycles. But clearly, most scientists believe that it is human-caused, at least this haste, the quickening of the pace of warming is human-caused. Brittany, what do climate models tell us about future summers here in this country, here in this state, here in this city?
You know, there is good climate modeling, just like any kind of weather modeling. Obviously, it's not perfect, but the trend, unless we make changes, not only here in the United States, but other countries as well that have higher fossil fuel use, is that we would continue to warm. Again, I want to remind people that weather and climate are different. So just because you have the warmest spring on record or the warmest summer on record, whether that's here in the United States as a whole or somewhere else, or just the globe in general, that doesn't mean that you don't get bouts of cold temperatures or bouts of rainy conditions. In fact, we had the second warmest spring on record in Charlotte, but both March and April were like significantly above average, but we had a pretty cool May because it was so wet, but that wasn't enough to counteract the fact that March and April were so warm. So I just want to remind people too, it's like we say, oh, we're going to have a warm summer, but it's like you have 1 week where it's in the 70s because we have storms every day. The people come out and they're like, you said it was going to be blah, blah, blah. Again, climate is a 3-month, 30-year trend of warmth. Doesn't mean we won't get cold. 2023 was still one of the warmest years on record across the globe, but we had a low temperature Christmas Eve morning that was 9 degrees. That doesn't take away from the fact that it was 9 degrees and that people did suffer from that extreme cold, but it doesn't mean that as a whole, we didn't have a warm year.
Talking about the impact of a warming climate on us here this morning on WFAE. Zach, Duke Power this week asked people to conserve energy, to turn off lights what they weren't using, to raise their thermostats on the AC in order to keep to help them be able to meet the demand for energy production. Is our grid here, is our grid nationwide able to handle what's coming at us in the coming years?
That's a good question. I think there are a number, and I think this is maybe one of those good news areas, which is rare for me as a climate reporter to be the bearer of good news. But we have a lot of programs like the Duke Energy Power Pair program. There's a lot of incentives, like I mentioned, from the state in terms of getting people to do these energy retrofits. A lot of things that are focused at not so much providing more energy, but reducing the amount of energy that people are using. And so in situations like this, where we're trying to cool people's homes and let people run that AC to keep them safe, using less power is sort of the key.
I have less than a minute left. Dr. Branner, I want you to recap the signs to look for if you're being impacted by the heat and then what to do about it very quickly.
Notice if you are starting to have cramps, if you're starting to sweat excessively, if you're starting to get tired, recognize if that's in that situation and you feel it's maybe due to overheating, to try to find shade, to try to find a cool breeze, a fan to help blow across you, or get inside the air condition if possible. And if you notice someone having more extreme symptoms where their brain doesn't seem to be functioning as normally, get that person to an emergency room setting as quickly as possible.
Dr. Chris Branner is Specialty Medical Director at Urgent Care Services at Atrium Health Levine's Children's Urgent Cares at Blakeney, or Urgent Care at Blakeney, and all of the urgent care centers. He's in charge of them all with Atrium Health. Brittany Van Voorhees is a meteorologist at WCNC-TV, and Zach Turner is our climate reporter here at WFAE News. Stay cool, and thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.